Montgomery's done incredibly well to get up above Cargill and find Bennett. It's into the box. McNulty, cut back for Roberts. It's Gary Roberts for Bobby. Bobby are leading in the fourth round of the FA Cup. Mark McNulty, but a good chance by Doyle. For McNulty on the edge. Mark McNulty, oh, short yes. For Bobby. Smashes it past McCormack. Won by Doyle. Finished by the returning Mark McNulty. First left blood for Bobby. They're in dreamland early here at Fratton.
There's a through ball to Jamal Lowe. Jamal Lowe's onside. The flag stayed down. Jamal Lowe, nonchalant, fantastic, brilliant. Pompey will be promoted at this rate.
That is it. Pompey are champions. They've won League Two in the most dramatic of circumstances.
The PO4 podcast with Hugh Bunce, proud to be Pompey.
Hi, Pompey fans, and welcome to PO4 Cars episode 219. Well, it's a massive win in the promotion race over Peterborough as Pompey go 9 points clear at the top. Join the podcast today is Andy Mitchmore. How are you, Andy?
Hello, Bunce. Yeah, not too bad, thank you. It's been excellent fortnight for all three of us, hasn't it? You're not been well. Freddie's not been great, and I got sick for the 17th time in about 20 games at Fratton, so I think we've all been knocked out for one reason or another, hey? But yeah, getting back to normalish. Tar, how are you?
Yeah, not bad. Sorry for not recording last week. I basically managed to fracture my ribs and tear part of a muscle in my core on a night out. So one of my friends lifted me up and dropped me, and apparently that has caused serious damage. I didn't realize as much, Andy, if I'm honest, when I was out, because I may have had quite a few drinks at the time.
It doesn't sound like you.
Yeah, I know, it's completely out of the blue, but sober enough, you know, it's only my third ever time drinking a beer, and unfortunately, yeah, I've managed to injure myself, so add me to the long list of Pompey injuries. Freddie Webb, how are you, mate?
I am not bad, mate. Yeah, just getting by, usual stuff. Swearing at a clothes rail that broke yesterday, but apart from that, there's not much going on in my life, to be quite frank.
Is that why behind you looks like you're at some sort of jumble sale?
Yeah, literally. I have clothes on the back of a chair, on the sofa, and then on the laundry rail, which will probably collapse all the stuff on it. But there we are. You know me. I'm a very fashionable bloke.
You are. You have multiple outfits. You know, when we go away to an away day, you want to get changed three or four times. But can I buy that jumper in the background for £5?
Which one? Well, the one on my chair right behind me.
Yes, that one there.
Oh, right. I like it. It's new. It's a newer one.
Okay, we'll hold the GoFundMe for helping out member staff of the news, and we'll see if we can raffle off some of your clothes there. But we actually have something to talk about on that, don't we, Andy, later on? Some sort of competition to do with clothes?
We do. Yes, yeah? We do. Yeah. I'd forgotten about that. No, you're right. We do have a competition to talk about. Thank you for prompting me.
Should we get to that in a bit once I've stopped talking about how I can try and purchase Freddie's clothes and just let the listeners know what we're going to talk about first? So let's start with that. So first of all, we're going to review the game against Peterborough. Following from that, we're going to release the competition that Andy absolutely forgot about, but luckily I was there to prompt him. And then we put a question out to you guys, and we wanted to know, does Pompey have the squad depth to secure promotion despite the injuries? And finally, we're going to talk about the academy, a bit of news, and then we're going to wrap it up because there's no game to preview this week. So let's get started, boys. Let's talk about Peterborough. We all knew it was a massive game. The implications that this could potentially have, either stretching our lead at the top or potentially allowing teams to catch us, especially with Derby and Bolton playing each other as well. This was one of those games we needed to get at least a point out of. It was quite a close game, wasn't it, really? Peterborough started quite strong in this game as well from the kickoff. The first chance Pompey had, MPH had an early chance, tries to sort of curl it into the top corner, doesn't get it right, but I think the intent's there. Sadie does pretty well before he goes off injured. He wins a free kick. Pack manages to put it on target. I think he does quite nicely there as well, because he sort of tries to bounce it in front of the keeper, which causes Steer to drop it and nudge it out in front. But Andy, what did you think about the start of the Pompey game and how Peterborough came at us from the start?
I mean, we know what Peterborough are going to be like at the start of any game. They are a very attacking team. They come out the blocks fast every single game. I'm actually going to take a back seat on this one for the game review because this is the final game of the season I didn't actually get to watch. There's not many that I don't find a way to watch. I was having a much worse time being ill, watching my beloved Wales get their arses royally handed to them at the Millennium Stadium by Italy. So I'm only going to have limited input on this because I have seen the extended highlights. I've seen 9 minutes of the game, which is kind of hard to give actual in-depth podcast answers about. So I'm not really much use this week, unless you want to talk about the dire state of Welsh club rugby, the number of handling errors, and the question mark as to whether, you know, Georgia should be replacing Wales in the Six Nations. I've got a lot of thoughts on that, but Peterborough's fast start is very predictable, and I think that overall this game, I mean, if you look at what the league table would have been like had Peterborough picked up the 3 points, then it's a very, very different complexion, doesn't it? Because we're on 80, then Derby would be on 78, Bolton on 74, and it's just so much squeaky bum time. But yeah, I think you'd have to say, from my extensive 9 minute viewing of this game and sort of extreme podcast research, that we were probably quite fortunate to take the win. I think it's on one of those days where maybe a draw possibly would have been a fair result, again, based off that 9 minutes. So please tell me if I'm wrong. But outside of the main stuff, I'm going to be fairly useless. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I watched the whole game when, unfortunately, I was catching a cold in the Cardiff rain. And then watching Ireland against Scotland in a gay bar, actually, in Cardiff, which was a thoroughly enjoyable afternoon.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed your post-game drinks afterwards in Cardiff, which is a great city to go out in, so I will rep you for that. But brilliant. Well done. Okay, we'll move on.
You're going to keep this on track, aren't you? Throw it to Freddie, because I've got a lot to say about my Saturday, but very little of it is actually relating to the ebbs and the flows of Peterborough against Pompey.
Freddie, let's go to you then quickly, because I did watch the game and so did you. So let's get back into this and say, obviously, Peterborough had quite a fast start in this game. What did you think of the start for Pompey? And I think we're quite defensively sound, even though Peterborough put a bit of pressure on from the start.
Yeah, defensively responsible. And that was the worry going into this game, wasn't it? Because Joe Rafferty, from all accounts, was reportedly ill. Same with Paddy Lane. Paddy Lane basically travelled with the squad and then was taken away. He wasn't in a fit state to play. So he had Sparks and Swanson back at fullbacks on both sides. And Peterborough seemed fairly intent on attacking the wide areas. Like, every time the ball went to Randall or Collins, that were in the centre of the pitch, they were able to spray it out wide. Obviously, Harrison Burrows on the overlap a lot of the time. Same with Katongo on the other side. And they definitely looked to rotate the ball in and around the penalty area, get it to a wide area, and then dribble in.
That's just the Peterborough MO, though, isn't it, Fred?
They're
tried and tested, why they score so many, because they've got such good players in those wide positions.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Ephraim Mason-Clark was signed by Coventry in January and loaned back to them, so he's effectively a championship player at this point, and Kwame Pocker's got a lot of creativity as well. But it also didn't help that Pompey's fullbacks were the backup selections either. They were able to have some pretty decent chances. Mason Clark hit the post in the first half when he was given a bit of freedom to dribble in on the step over. Then he was able to hit the side netting as well from the similar side.
Didn't hit the bar rather than the post.
The bar corner post bit pedantic with everyone. And then go through there. But thankfully, Peterborough weren't able to really have a clear shot on target. If you believe Darren Ferguson, they bossed the game. But really, I know that they created a fair bit in terms of chances going into the penalty area. But when once got to the penalty area, they were drifted out wide a fair bit by Pompey's defence. They were able to compact them, basically block Peterborough from getting anywhere central, and then limited the chances from there. It was pretty decent job defensively, but Peterborough still had the majority of the play in that first half.
Yeah, it was good. And you were talking about Pompey sort of pushing them wide. I noticed that Swanson obviously came in kind of late notice, I suppose, Rafferty being ill. So he had to step straight into it. Mason Clark did have those chances, but at the same time, he didn't register a successful dribble versus Swanson. And Swanson won 3 of 3 tackles against him as well. You see the chances he had. And I thought Swanson does well to stand on his feet a lot, show him wide the whole time. Doesn't let him cut back inside and shoot, which we've seen Mason Clark do a lot. He likes to come inside, cut back, and then shoot across the keeper. So I think in this game, Swanson did a really good job, didn't he, across the back. And Sparks did pretty well as well against Poku. I do like the bit of beef he had. the pushing at the post.
The handbags, it showed a lot of class. Thankfully, he didn't go overboard and use his fist like a lot of the fans wanted him to, but there we are. No. Properly rattled him, thankfully.
Oh, Freddie, on the note, on the sort of topic of scary behaviour at football and anger, I realised the other week what it is about your behaviour at football that scares me. Because I know we've talked about it before. I think it was Port Vale away. We spoke about my not very well hidden fear of you on match days. And I've realised why. And it's because you flip like a light switch in that you're calm, calm, calm and fury. And there's no warning sign. You're very, very calm and relaxed. And then suddenly the minutest thing will happen and you'll go from 0 to 100 and I'll be in fear of my life. And I didn't realise at the time at Port Vale, that's what the scary thing is. It's not your anger. It's the sudden onset. I rate it. It's very good at football, but I forgot to tell you on our WhatsApp that that's what scares me about you.
Listeners, that does not happen in other stages of life aside from football. So if any of you are scared, don't worry.
He turns into a Yorkshire Terrier.
Perfectly
a Yorkshire
harmless.
Terrier, don't you, Fred?
Yorkshire just Terrier or Yorkshire Ripper? There's a big difference.
Accusing.
We'll let the listeners decide on that one. Getting back to the game, though, I thought the defensive solidarity, or that if that's the right word, of the team effectively wasn't just from the defence, although I thought Shaughnessy and Raggett also had a good game in this as well. Owen Moxon, I thought, was particularly impressive in this game, going forward as well as defensively. He had the most tackles of 4. He won the most duels in the game. And he also had 11 passes in the final third. So he was one of these real box-to-box players. He did what we've sort of been hoping when he came in, alongside Marlon Pack, who again had a fantastic game. And do you think the two of them together, having that platform to stop Peterborough playing through us properly and creating chances further up the pitch, was a big reason why we managed to win this game?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, neither side had, throughout the entire game, on an average, they both deployed a bit of a high press around 8 on the PPDA, but still having the double pivot there with who have both of them defensively responsible, both able to win the ball back fairly well, but also the creative ability to start counterattacks was necessary in this game because Peterborough are always going to have the lion's share of the play because that's what the team is based around and that's what they're good at. They always want play in and around the final third, four backs overlapping the wingers, everything focused on going forward. So to be able to have the solid protection and base in front of the back four protected them from dribbling a fair bit, and that thankfully led to Portsmouth eventually coming out on top of this game. I thought the double pivot played extremely well. So did the back four. Back four played incredibly well given the circumstances that some of them came in late and so on.
Lads, question to the two of you who actually watched the full 90 then. In the return fixture earlier this season, we had real problems in the first half an hour or so with Swanson being too far advanced from the right back position. And I can't remember who was playing left back that day, either Sparks or Ogilvy being too far forward as well. And players like Mason Clark getting a lot of space in behind. Did Swanson and in this case Sparks sit slightly deeper than they've tended to in other games that have been similar recently, to sort of negate that repeating itself?
A few times, but they were still caught out on occasion. Like, for example, there was a chance that Harrison Burrows had when Pompey had the ball pretty much in Peterborough's final third, but then it was a tackle and then one quick through ball and then Burrows was in all the way through with lots of space against the centre half, but he basically just blazed it over the bar and didn't
that's the chance
from it.
That was
those chances happened a bit less. There was at least always somebody trying to stand off the winger, mark them to a certain extent and then shuffle them out wide, or at least reduce the angle of any potential shot that was coming in. But so defensively, they looked more solid and better in this game, I thought, anyway.
I think one of the Pack sort of Moxon combination tended to drop in, as we've seen before, when the fullbacks went forward. So sometimes you saw that it's sort of helping with on the cover. But as Fred said, when we were actually goal side of them with the fullbacks, we stood them up a lot. We sort of baited them to come and sort of try and knock it past us. And I think both of them did really well in one-on-one defending, which is a big reason why I was worried going into the game with, you know, the Swanson and Sparks pairing without Ogilvy being there and Rafferty. But both of them did really well one-on-one defending against some really tricky wingers. And I think that stopped them having so many chances on the break that were actually clear-cut chances, I suppose. So just moving on then, let's talk about the introduction of Singy Yengi coming on. Obviously, unfortunately, Sadie goes off. Luckily, we heard after the game that John Massino says that he's going to be okay. It's not like a tear in his hamstring. So, but bringing Yengi on at the time, I was a bit like, okay, let's see how it works. Bishop obviously dropped deeper in this, into that role, and it played quite a pivotal part of the goal we had, Freddie, as well. But before we get onto that goal, how do you think the Bishop dropping deeper and Yengi going further on, do you think that's a partnership we can see working in the future? Is that something we'll see in the next game against Wickham?
I think it worked in this game purely because Pompey were on the counter-attack a lot more and had to drop a bit deeper. Because whenever the ball would come out of Pompey's defence, Bishop was always battling for it with Peterborough defenders and was able to make things a lot more complicated for them, even if he didn't always win the ball there. Senior came out in the news and basically said he's still looking to play either Bishop or Yengi in the start, game by game, basically matching them up against the opposition. He cited Yengi starting against Cambridge and then Bishop starting against Peterborough. It seems like that will be the case going forward unless injuries prevent him. So, for example, if there's no really good options at number 10, then Massino might be forced by Bishop at 10 and then Yengi up front. It's a bit hard because both the strikers are focal points, aren't they? They're the focal points of the play. They're quite similar in that regard, even though going forward, they're quite different, if that makes proper sense at all. But no, it worked in this game purely because of the situation that Pompey were in, I thought.
Let's talk about the goal, and this is something Andy would have seen on the extended highlights. So it comes from a quick counter-attack, and it's interesting because Gavin White does well here, and he plays basically a 1-2 with Colby Bishop. He does what he does well. We talked about those secondary assists, Andy, and this is one of those situations before where he allows Gavin White to sort of like release him by having that 1-2, really clever, quick passing up the pitch before Gavin White plays a really nice ball over to the side for Yengi, who then, when he's one-on-one, with his sort of power, his pace, his directness, you kind of fancy him to score the goal. Little step over, pushes it past the defender. I think it was Burrows. Hits it into the near post, and it's 1-0 Pompey. 12 minutes to go.
Yeah, that's, you just answered the question you were asking me. That is correct. That is what happened here. Yes. No, I mean, I can do my weekly spout of how much I think Bishop's involved in the early stages of our goals and our secondary assists and all that jazz. If you like, I can do a good 2 to 5 minutes on that, like I do most weeks. But in terms of Gavin White, I mean, I think it's something that obviously we didn't record last week, but something that Fred and I spoke about in person at the end of the game, I think, Fred, was Gavin White coming on towards the end of the Burton game and the sort of level of calm and assurance and good decision-making we saw at the end of that game. And I think even in, what was it, like a 5-minute cameo at the end of the Burton game, when things were getting a little bit hectic after we conceded, it sort of brought an air of calm almost compared to how the few minutes preceding it had done. And it's, again, from a small sample size for what I've seen from this game, but from doing quite a decent amount of reading, makes it sound very academic. From scrolling Twitter, lads, it sounds like the game, his performance was generally good. And as you say here, yeah, that one little, the little 1-2 with Colby Bishop, it's a smart ball out to Yengi on the left. And then, like, yeah, you fancy him one-on-one, don't you? Just, it's that one little shoulder drop, that one little feint, and gets the ball out from his feet. Don't know if the keeper should save it. I don't know, near post, cliches, all that stuff. There's so much power on it. You could certainly say that that's harsh, but it's such a nice breakaway goal. Even the initial clearance from the cross that break comes from, everything about that is precise and incisive from Pompey. And it just shows why the team is where they are, I guess, because you're looking at defending that attack, you know, slightly squeaky bum time, backs against the wall slightly. And then within, what, 7 seconds or so, they're creating a decent quality chance in the opposition box and burying it. And yeah, it's two players that I think are going to have a lot of influence towards the end of the season. I think Gavin White is going to have more and more of a role to play. Obviously, Cassini Yengi will continue doing what he's doing. I think, isn't he averaging a goal every 89 minutes or something silly of play? He's like top in the, is it in the Football League or just in League One, I saw, for goals per minute?
At the very least, he's top of League One for
minutes per goal.
For goals per 90.
Yeah.
Because whenever Yengi has played, he's just been prolific. He's just the sort of player who, you know, looking to it, if he gets in the position, he'll score. Like in the Burton game, I mean, took his second goal incredibly well. lovely. Obviously, a lot of it was down to the play in front of him, but the movements, getting the six-yard box on his own.
Yeah.
Excellent striker's play. And for all the stick that Gavin White got, he's probably got the two most pivotal assists of the season. This cross in this game against Peterborough, and then the cross for the Yankees goal against Bolton as well. Massive. And it's nice to see him contributing properly to the first team again. I've liked it. Really like that a lot.
When we managed to see out the game well, we talked about the defensive solidarity at the back and how solid we were just generally. And obviously the 4,000 fans at the game, loving life. And Darren Ferguson comes out after the game criticising the club for selling that amount of tickets. Boo-hoo. No one cares. But at the same time, it's one of those things that it does help the team, I suppose, having that following, having people sort of roaring them on for a cliche and stuff like that. But I didn't think when Peterborough, at that, you know, the last sort of 12 minutes of the game, whatever it was, I didn't really think they looked like they were going to score. So it just goes to show. I think we've kept clean sheets in 12 away games now this season. So it's one of those things that we seem to be such a good shutdown team. And whilst Ferguson can bang on about they're the better team, we've heard that a lot this season, haven't we, Andy? We've heard a lot of managers come out and said, oh, we were better, or oh, they're not the best team we've seen or whatever. But this is just a team that knows how to win. They know how to win. We take our chances. We're prolific. And Peterborough up front really missed having a Bishop or a Yenge, for instance, and not having that focal point up front. If you look at a lot of teams in the division, Derby don't have that focal point really either. Don't really rate Dwight Gale in that situation either. But I know they've got those injury issues. We're just so lucky, aren't we, to have that both strikers, I suppose, in the situation, and never really looked like conceding.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the focal point of the side, I guess, Peterborough, from an outside view, you'd say you're probably looking at Jonathan Clark-Harris for that. But obviously, there's a lot of water under the bridge in his relationship with Peterborough and almost going to Bristol Rovers and now being used. I mean, he came on, what, 89th minute or 90th minute in this game? That is who I would identify as their focal point. And obviously, his minutes are not there at this moment in time. So, oh no, San Marino just conceded a second goal to St. Kitts and Nevis. Oh, you hate to see it.
Does that affect Wales somehow? Are you fighting out some sort of bottom spot in a group or something?
No, San Marino. It's one of the first games in about 20 years that they've been bookies favourites for. Now they're 2-1 down at home to St. Kitts and Nevis in a friendly. It's a big game. Anyway, I've literally forgotten what the question was. Oh, focal points. Yeah, absolutely. So again, I can't comment on how comfortably we saw the game out on a minute-by-minute basis. But I mean, there has been a level of composure there for the most part after we've gone a goal or two goals up in previous games, or even if a team has pegged us back as Burton did. There's just been a level of composure there, hasn't there? And there's that never say die attitude we've spoken about myriad times this year, especially earlier on in the season when we had that absurd record of scoring in the last 10 minutes and the last 5 minutes. It's like 7 times in 10 games or something silly. I don't know how to finish my point here. I'm just looking at replays of the San Marino goal. Keeper's had a nightmare.
It seemed like a lot of this game was won in the duels, and Pompey were ahead in pretty much every single duel metric, in possession, out of possession, in the air. They were able to win the ball back at crucial points, even though Peterborough had large spells of possession at times, and they still didn't really create that much. Both sides had 15 shots. Pompey had 4 on target, Peterborough had 1. The total expected goals are pretty similar. Peterborough's was ahead around about 1.05, Pompey just below in the 0.9 region. So for all of Darren Ferguson's talk about how Pompey were lucky and anyone who thought otherwise was kidding themselves, it wasn't as clear cut, even though Peterborough had those large spells of possession, there are lots of attacks at once. They didn't have a focal point. The ball went through Poku or Mason Clark, and then that was about it. Malik Mothersill wasn't as effective as Bienge or Bishop were at all as the focal point at any rate. But it's brilliant that Pompey were able to dig in deep in this game and bring out the result. That was a massive, massive, massive win.
Where do we place Darren Ferguson on the ratio, on the sort of the scale between John Messino's very honest and open and fair end of match interviews at one end, and then a sort of Steve Evans scale on the other end, or, you know, Joey Barton? Where do we place him on that scale, the Messino Evans scale, Fred?
I mean, Darren Ferguson's not as bad as those two, but he's still bad at that sort of thing. I don't know. If you rate Steve Evans as a 10, you'd probably give Darren Ferguson an 8, wouldn't you? For post-match madness.
You shouldn't be objectifying them rare, really, Freddie. This is why you don't succeed on nights out, mate. You can't just sit there going, oh, 8,
brilliant,
10.
Steve Evans a 10. We know what Freddie's type is. There you go.
Brilliant.
It's just Freddie just muted himself. Not even bothering.
I feel that with Darren Ferguson as well, he's a bit defensive. He brought on 3 substitutes in the 90th minute, including Clark Harris, when you're already losing and then you're wasting more time bringing on 3 subs who aren't warmed up. It just seemed like a silly tactical move that I thought he might have been criticised for. So I think he just got a bit defensive. He's hoping to win this, close the gap, frustrated, and he just lashed out, didn't he? I think that's the case with him. He can be quite methodical and fine, especially when they're winning. He's just a bit of a sore loser, that's what I'd say. Not quite Steve Evans.
He's a Ferguson, isn't he? I mean, he's been brought up in around success and not being used to losing, and that's going to have an impact on how he goes about his business, nature and nurture and all that stuff. It's probably fair enough based on where he's come from.
All right, let's wrap it into the next section now. I think we've covered the game.
You've cut me off before I started to talk about Scotland. That's probably...
No, wait, we have one last bit of the game to cover, and the most significant part, and Andy's favourite bit of any match review.
Is this the bit where we do another 10-minute segment on South Wales that gets cut out of the final by Hugh?
Absolutely, or? Absolutely not. We're playing Guess the XG. And it's a very straightforward Guess the XG this week. Can you give me the expected goals rate of Cassini Yenge's beautiful finish at the near post for Pompey to take all 3 points?
Andy, it's your turn to go first, I believe.
I don't think it is. I think this is your turn to go first.
Okay.
It is, yes, from memory.
0.25.
Oi. That's annoying. I don't like it when you go first, because then I struggle not to copy you. We always spend too long on this, so I'm not going to spend too long on it. I think it is less than that. I'm going 0.21.
Andy has pipped it by an inch, because Y Scouts gave Cassini Yenge's shot
as always
as 0.22. So Andy is the closest, and the obviously people are ignoring the promotion push. The thing they're most worried about is the Guess the XG table, which I have the results here. I'm going to leave them in suspense until the end.
I'm doing a bit of what Barnsley were doing until the last few games. I feel like I was quite a long way down halfway through the season and had a bit of a late push.
I think you're winning, mate, to be honest.
I don't know.
I think you started doing serious research with your new Y Scout account.
No, I've just stopped attributing my guesses to my pet. I think that's actually really helped me on the league table, but I've lost at least 4 points to Gida.
I'm full on gutted because I actually wore my lucky OG original Ryan Williams shirt to try and win Guess the OG.
Guess the OG.
Guess your own goal.
That's like a Richard Dunn, isn't it? Doesn't he hold the record for number of own goals in the Premier League? Richard Dunn used to play for...
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, no,
Sunderland, Man City, Villa.
Villa, yeah, that's what I'm thinking of, yeah. Wearing lucky shirts doesn't count for anything, mate. Wales on Saturday, I had my lucky oddballs WRU boxers on, I had my Welsh shirt on, I got my South African girlfriend in a Welsh top. Everything was Wales, and then we were 18-0 down. So yeah, counts for sweet FA, pal.
That's probably your reason why you lost. Just went 2 Wales, and basically Wales went 2 Wales. So
I think our issue was that the rugby team couldn't catch rather than the shirt choice. And in rugby, that's a fairly major coaching flaw. Fitting way for George North to retire. That was limping off, about to lose to supposedly the worst team in the tournament.
Anyway,
back to round balls.
Yeah, ooh, let's move
that's
on.
Phrasing.
Andy, talking about lucky shirts, why don't you tell people about our competition?
Yeah, thank you very much, Hugh. And thank you again for remembering at the start of the podcast, because I had not. So we are running a competition at the moment. So big thank you to Joe Churcher, who's got in touch and has actually donated a prize for us to use. So it's a combination thing between Pompey News Now and the Frat and Faithful. So the two groups these days, I mean, they're essentially one and the same. Let's be honest, we've got gradually closer as the years have gone by over the last 5 to 8 years. And yeah, Joe Churcher has very kindly donated a framed match-worn shirt from the classic Pompey 2014-2015 season from fan favourite Patrick Adjemang. And I'm not going to sing his chant on the podcast, but it is extremely kind of him to donate it. So thank you. It is a size large. So if you wanted to take it out in the frame and wear it, you could do. But it is currently in a frame with a little plaque at the bottom saying, "This shirt is certified as match worn by Portsmouth FC player Patrick Adjemang, number 23, during the 2014-15 season, presented as part of the Tifosi fan funding campaign summer 2014. So Joe, big shout out to you. I think you've only just recently started listening to the pod, so very kind of you to donate this. We are going to put social media posts out about this on both the Frat and Faithful Facebook page and the Pompey News Now Twitter, X, and Instagram. And you need to do three things to be in with a chance of winning the shirt. So it's the classic social media engagement competition, isn't it? All you need to do is make sure that you follow Pompey News Now on Twitter, that you, if you have Instagram, follow Pompey News Now on Instagram, and on Facebook, that you follow the Frat and Faithful, it's easy for me to say, the Frat and Faithful Facebook page. And then when we post social media information about the competition, just either post as a comment or DM the Facebook, the Twitter, or the Instagram with screenshot evidence that you follow all three of those accounts. And then we'll do a live draw on the podcast in a few weeks' time, lads, just to really ramp up the celebrations. But also big thanks to Rob, who is picking up the shirt for us from Joe in the Gosport area. If this turns out to be an elaborate plot to, I don't know, lure one of us into a back alley in Gosport, then Joe, your secret's out. You're not going to get away with it. Rob, thank you for making the sacrifice for the podcast. So
there's not a better person out there to be sacrificed than Rob as well. So
he's happy to do it for the cause. He's Blue Army PFC, isn't he? So this is the ultimate sacrifice. We appreciate it. But yeah, basically for now, just keep an eye out on our social media. And once we've got the prize physically on us, we will we'll post more about the competition to come.
Thank you, Andy. Right, Fred, take us away with the new segment. Let's start with the academy. You can wrap us into the news about that. I'm obviously going to have no comments on this section because I never bring up a development team or talk about the academy generally. So let's let a more level-headed person start and talk about what's going on with the players being released at the Pompey Academy.
Right, so the argument of Pompey having an under-21 side and the state of the academy came up again after the news came out by Neil Allen that 10 second-year scholars and one third-year scholar are all going to be released. The one academy player to stay currently is Kobe Motta, but he's been given 2 weeks to win a pro deal, so it's not entirely confirmed whether he'll stay or not. The players who will be leaving include Destiny Ojo, Harvey Laidlaw, Mitch Aston, Sam Follerin, Brian Kwan, Bastian Smith, Malachi Osei-Owusu, Jack Fox, Maxwell Hurst, Kevin Basake, and Dan Murray. Now, obviously, with, again, a lot of players from the academy being released all at once, obviously Pompey don't have an under-21 side, so effectively, every single player reaching the end of that age range has to be pretty much in contention to be roughly in and around the first team with what? And after the next 2 years, do you think? Or at least be capable of being loaned out into men's football. For example, Pompey have Harry Jewett-White on loan at Waterlooville, Toby Stewart, who's played for Gosport and Bognor, and Hadji Minoga, who's played regularly for Aldershot. Andy Cullen spoke to Neil Allen and said that in terms of introducing an under-21 side, that idea is never off the table, quoted, though he added that a reliable return on investment is necessary for, to basically put it together. Andy Cullen said, "There are always options, but you have to look at what an under-21 squad actually does and whether it increases the opportunities for academy players. Take Toby Stewart, his pathway so far is men's football, getting the opportunity for regular game time at Gosport and Bognor. Whereas with playing against under-21 teams, the standard of 18 to 21 players is not necessarily increased or enhanced. Having an under-21 side is never off the table, but you must take a lens to it and ask whether it would increase the productivity at that particular level and give boys a chance instead of getting them out playing. Cullen added that it would cost a considerable amount of money to accommodate at least 15 players at that age range with the extra staff and the extra infrastructure. He added, our strategy at the moment is to go out and identify good under 21 players for the first team, and cites multiple examples such as Riley Towler, Christian Sadie, Terry Devlin, players of that age range who are in and around the first team, not necessarily developed by the academy, but found through increased scouting. And Cullen said that the club is looking at all factors to improve the extremely high bar for academy players to get into the first team. That's all in a nutshell. In my opinion, it's extremely difficult. The arguments I've seen bandied around is, well, the money that you could put towards this, say if Pompey get promoted, if they get promoted, the money that putting towards this squad and improving the academy can be put towards a player or two in the championship, which will keep the club in the division. And then long-term financially, that's better. I agree to a certain extent, but the problem is, it's pretty clear that, you know, your scouting has to be top-notch to be able to offset the fact that your academy, that an academy isn't very good compared to its rivals. Pompey have a category C academy. It's nowhere near rivals over the road, and it's also nowhere near Bournemouth or Brighton or the London team sniffing around the players on the South Coast either. I think the problem is, the longer the club leaves it, the bigger the problem it's going to be, because if kids younger don't see a way into the first team that's clear, they will not sign up with Pompey at a younger age. They'll simply go to other clubs, and effectively the club's kicking the can down the road. And I know that for development, it might be better for a player to be at men's football at that age of 18, but not every player is going to be there. And you have to give them as many opportunities as they can to be able to develop and improve. So it might be a case of, if Pompey get promoted and stabilise in the championship, I think academy investment has to be put as a priority if they stabilise up there. I mean, Michael Eisner mentioned it in the AGM when Tornout bought the club. It wasn't necessarily, you know, a promise that would that's the one promise really that I don't think has been delivered, the major one anyway. I think I've rambled on enough, so yeah, I'll leave it up to you guys for your opinions.
Yeah, I think it just highlights how big that step up is, isn't it? I mean, from academy football to the senior squad, when the rate of what is essentially player cutting is that high. There are some very good players that you've listed there who have been let go. I mean, the ones I'm probably most familiar with, Mitch Aston and Jack Fox, I've seen a decent amount of both of them play. Very good level footballers. And obviously, the Pompey team have had a pretty decent season, all things considered, as well. So it's not as if it's a side that have languished near the bottom of their table. I think just demonstrates how cutthroat it is, even when you get to that stage. And that kind of is the case with a lot of sports. I think there's an assumption that once you get to a certain level, the road is there for you in all sports. I mean, to use a bit of a parallel with cricket here, which I know Hugh loves, is that watching the under-19 World Cup, and the stats were being thrown around for people who play for their country in the under-19 World Cup and actually make it to play senior cricket for their country. And for Australia, who won the tournament, it was something like 15 to 20% tops of players who would play in a World Cup winning under-19 side would actually play for the senior men's team. And it's kind of like a slightly watered down, a diluted version of that, because there's so many more, you know, academy teams for clubs in the UK. And I mean, Hugh, I'll throw it to you in a second, because I know that, you know, without wanting to repeat yourself, you do have quite strong views on the whole academy side of things. I'm kind of torn on it, if I'm honest, because we don't see these players week in, week out, day in, day out on the training pitch. And if it is the case that they're not of the standard that realistically they're ever going to be threatening the first team in the next few years, then firstly, it's not fair on the players, because they're going to be wasting potentially some of the best years of their career physically in a place where there's probably a brick wall at the end of it. And also, I guess financially, you have to look at it as well in terms of the club. And, you know, we wax lyrical about how well run the club is financially now. And if they have made a crunch decision that players aren't going to make it at a level, putting money into that isn't a financially brilliant decision, just trying to take the emotion out of it. So I'm kind of torn in a few directions, because you do get, you know, quite attached to these players on a professional football level. And it does suck seeing them leave. And I always get quite nostalgic seeing similar names from the last 5-6 years popping up. I think I've mentioned before sort of the hashtag United match vlogs on YouTube, the number of times they're playing against Gosport or Bognor or wherever. And it's so many names that we've seen play for Pompey in the whatever trophies. And you do get quite nostalgic. But yeah, I'm torn on it. It's sad to see such a high cut rate, but I don't think it's abnormal at this level of the game. And yeah, we wish them all the best. And I genuinely hope that a lot of those players go on to prove the decision makers wrong. And that's not me necessarily wanting either of them to be wrong, but I really hope the players go and make a success of their careers. Hugh, I'll tag you in.
I think it's just fair to say, rather than judging each individual player who's been let go in this sense, that it's just not working at the moment, is it? The way we're doing it now isn't working. I mean, if you're having to cut all the players basically from multiple age groups year after year after year, it's just not working. And when Andy Cullen says it's, you know, not off the table to have a development squad, I think it's just got to be a goal to do it. Not like, oh, it's not going to be off the table. That's just like saying it's not a resounding no. Not off the table means it could be 3% likely to happen. Oh, you know, this is something we're aiming towards, which I do think it needs to be something the club are going, yes, this is something we're working towards, rather than it's not off the table when it comes to a development squad.
Yeah, I think just on that, in my profession at least, I don't know if it's the same as yours, Hugh, if I have an idea at work and I give it to one of my seniors at work and they tell me, oh, yeah, we're considering it, your idea isn't off the table, I'm never expecting that idea to happen. And I'm certainly not saying that that's the case with Andy Cullen in this profession, but in my profession, that's what not off the table means. I know you're not going to commit strongly either way, but reading between the lines in academia, that means we don't want to say no, it might work, but it's all in all likelihood not happening. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt there. Please carry on.
Yeah, no, it's just one of those situations where I feel like that's just preventing a backlash against saying no to the idea a little bit. That's just a bit of a sort of fluff talk. But look, I think if you're going to, when you're sort of going to stabilise yourself in the Championship, when you're trying to think about building a squad and when you're trying to bring through young players that you can eventually sell on to other teams around you and you can use them and utilise them as squad players, when you've got injury issues, you don't have to keep buying players. You can bring up some of these players and utilise them as well. When they're talking about, you know, scouting players at the age of 19, 20, 21, that's only going to get more difficult to integrate them into the first team when you go up to the Championship, because the level's so much higher. So expecting those players to come in and play straight away, for instance, into that team and make a big impact into the first team could be a bit unrealistic. I don't see this difference between having a men's team loan system and being an either or with the development squad. There's absolutely no reason why you can't be loaning players out from the development squad, for instance. If you think they need a loan to another, I don't know, a League Two team or a League One team or whatever in the future, you can loan players out. We often loan players ourselves from Premier League under 23 teams or to, you know, under 20 teams. And people do that with other teams as well. I just think you need to give people a clear path to be able to develop. Not everyone at 18 is going to be able to step in and be a player who makes a huge impact in the first team. And I think that's only going to become more difficult the more successful and the higher up the football pyramid you go. So if you want it to be a success at all and you want to be able to scout exciting, talented 18, 19, 20-year-olds in the Championship who you can develop then, and you can give them a bit of game time, you can give them regular game time, and so they're not going to necessarily think, okay, I'm out now, I'm 19 years old, I'm not in the match squad. So for me, as the club progresses, it has to be, right, we've done this, we've stabilised, we've helped build Fratton Park up, you know, we've done all these things, we've increased the scouting, we've done a lot of good things as well. I think Rich Hughes has done a great stuff on the sporting side, but I think it has to be a goal now of, how are we going to get ourselves to having this team? It's on the table, as you said, Andy, which usually for me as well means no, but not saying no right now, because that could cause a backlash. Anything else to say, boys?
I think on that point, it's pretty much it. It might be
yeah.
a devil's advocate even further. It might be a case that those players, I mean, Pompey's best youth prospects at the moment, we have Haji Benoga, who's older, and he's playing in the National League tops. You have Toby Stewart, who's highly regarded goalkeeper, but he's playing further down the pyramid than that. Harry Jewett-White, playing in the Conference South for Havant, who have had a dreadful season. Thankfully, he's been playing more now and impacting games. But if the top echelon of loans is going there, what about the other youth products? Are they good enough to play men's football? I mean, Destiny Ojo was playing for Poole recently on loan, did all right from all manner of what I've read. We don't know. It might just be a case of the category being so low and the competition being so high that in the very, very short term, the club just don't see investing in it as the priority. But I think if Pompey have to stabilise the championship, they have to. They can't just leave it at this rate. Not they can't leave it, surely.
Toby Stewart's been linked with some higher footballers. And wasn't he linked? Premier League side Sheffield United have been an interested party in him. Yeah, Pompey are in talks with him over a new deal. The news claims he's attracting interest with Premier League side Sheffield United mentioned as a club who have watched him in the past. Okay, maybe that's a bit different then. But yeah, Hugh, feel free to move on. My bloody hamster has just spilt melon juice all over my sofa. Literally, I had a bowl of melon, a melon medley, if you will, that I'd eaten with a load of melon juice at the base. She has climbed off my lap, climbed up the side of the empty plastic pot, knocked it over, got herself covered in melon juice, and now it looks like I've wet myself on the sofa. There's a massive wet patch. Don't get pets.
Yeah. All right. So rant over about the academy, but at the same time, we'll reiterate, I'm generally on the sporting side really happy with the way that we've increased our scouting and how we're, you know, assessing players, looking at data, looking at video. So I think we're really on the right track. It's just the one little nitpicking thing I've got, and it's just progressing the club even further. And I suppose I'm always going to bang that drum if I think it's a situation where we can, where places where we can improve. Let's move on to the listener question, guys, then. And thanks to everyone who messaged in. Really appreciate it. Makes the show. We put a question out to you guys, and we said, does Pompey have the squad depth to secure promotion despite the injuries? Harry Bond mentioned it, and he says, yes, we absolutely do. Look at White. Out of the squad, has come in and done a good job in the last few games, and he got the assist on Saturday. Every player has their turn in playing their part. We're pretty much up now, but officially promoted against Barnsley and win the league against Wigan. Harry, that is so specific.
Freddie, I've never seen your face do that before when Hugh read out pretty much up. I've never seen that facial expression on you.
Such a shock.
Is some sort
shock
of Bell's palsy? Are you okay?
No, I'm perfectly fine. It's just that I don't know what it is. Maybe my innate, some sort of deep, dark rooted cynicism, or the fact that I don't want to speak it to existence until it happens.
PTSD of supporting a Pompey.
I would never say that. I would never say that in my entire life. Oh, God. It could, but God knows. God knows.
Promoted against Barnsley and win the league against Wigan. You heard it here. Harry Bonds, he's the man. He's got the scoop already. Talking about what Harry actually said, though, Andy, apart from that bit that made Freddie wince, you look at the squad we've got, you look at Gavin White making an impact. I think Messina said about everyone having their role. Do you think the system allows players to step in and, you know what they're doing straight away? And that sort of enables the squad to sort of plug holes, and someone goes out, it's next man up, step in, and that's the reason why it's working with our squad depth despite the injuries.
To a certain extent, I don't think it's a case of plugging holes by any stretch, because that suggests there's a bit of a sort of a blagging nature to it, like, oh, he can fill in there. I don't think it's plugging holes. I think it's we've got such a set system, or to be fair, a number of systems. You look at Joe Rafferty playing right centre back the other game. There are a number of systems where there are multiple players that can rotate slightly. I mean, how many different positions have we already seen MPH play in? How many different positions have we seen Kamara and Lane play in, even in within one game where they're swapping wings? You know, we've seen Bishop play at 10 and 9 in the last 7 days. And although we're running pretty thin on that central defensive midfield to a certain extent, thanks to injuries, there's just a squad depth there that allows it not to be terminal when, you know, we pick up a ridiculous number of injuries as we have done this season. And yeah, your heart was in your mouth when Saidi went down the other day, wasn't it, for that reason? But there are so many players in that team. I'd be interested to know how many players have played at 10 this season since the beginning. I'm not expecting either of you to know off the top of your head, but I'd be really interested to know that.
At PO Forecast, let us know.
Yeah, do let us know. Anyone who's paid more attention than us in terms of keeping a tally as we've gone. But someone like Devlin, for example, he's played central defensive midfield. He's played at 10. He's played at right back. Has he played on sort of in a more advanced wing role at any point? Probably. Did he play right wing against Oxford?
He played wing as well, yeah. But he was sort of inverted winger, wasn't he?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's so much diversity there in terms of the positions that they're not just capable of filling a hole in, but actually capable of performing at a good League One standard. And it's been needed this season, hasn't it, with some of the injuries we've had. I saw a first 11 of Pompey injured players, and it's challenging for playoffs at absolute least. It's a fantastic side, but none of them can walk, which makes it more difficult to challenge for playoffs, I guess.
Tim Footmatch in and says, yes, it does. We're on the home straight now. 10 points from 7 games is very doable. In fact, I think we might even get a few back in the squad. We've shown our ability to grind out results against the run of play, and this is huge at this stage of the season. Yeah, completely, Tim. We mentioned how Pompey find a way to win just earlier on in the last segment. 10 points from 7 games, Freddie. Is that enough then? 93 points to get us promoted? Now, we spoke about this when it was just me and you on the podcast, and we said how many points you need to get promoted. Looking now at a table, Bolton, 74 points. So 9 points ahead. Give us 10 more points. Is that enough then? 10 points from 7 games.
Cynicism says no, but mathematics probably says yes. It would depend. 10 points with 3 wins, it would depend where the wins were against. If they're against other sides, then potentially a little less, but obviously crunch games against Derby and Bolton. Positive results in those matches, and then Pompey
and Barnsley.
And Barnsley. Pompey could be home clear to an extent, and Pompey have been able to grind out those results because they're just matching up against sides incredibly well. Example, you had the Cambridge game on Tuesday night where they played in a way where they dominated possession, controlled the match, waited for the opportunity, then created their chances. And then Peterborough away, they're able to play on the counter-attack, soak up possession, win the ball in midfield in the key areas, and then great, brilliant counter-attacks. It's a very flexible side. And it's not... I think I like that about this team an awful lot. It's not just you have plan A and you play it, and then plan A doesn't work, and then you continue with plan A anyway. The side is very adaptable. All the players seem to have an excellent mentality to go with it as well. So that's probably what gives me the confidence the most, really. The fact that Pompey have been able to match up against opposition incredibly well.
On a random note off that, Fred, just saying what you said about plan A, etc. When I was on a Gabe Sutton show, shout out to Gabe, the EFL debate, and I was talking to one of the Bolton content creators, and he said that Bolton don't need a plan B because it's just plan A, plan A, plan A. And you have to be as good as you can be at plan A. And teams don't need a plan B. They just need to be good at what they do the whole time. Do you think that Pompey have just got a bit of a different approach in that sense then? Andy?
I was just going to say, is this your way of flexing your best mates with Fogden?
No, it was not Fogden.
You're not a fan?
I don't know the man, if I'm honest. I don't watch any of his stuff.
I've tried to watch his videos, but it just made me depressed, so I didn't. Anyway, with that point of plan A, the side has to be so good and so far away for just plan A to work. I think about that period of Paul Cook's League Two winning side, where they went on that magical run after the Crewe defeat, where A, they didn't look like losing a game at all, and B, you looked across the pitch and you looked at the way of playing and you thought, I wouldn't have any opposition player replacing any of this starting 11. With this Pompey team, you could argue, some people would argue that the high-end talent compared to other sides might not be there, but the fact that is the team as a whole is better than them. The team as a whole is better than other sides as things stand. And obviously, a lot of the players in this side are among the best in the league at that position. I mean, I wouldn't have any other striker ahead of Colby or Yenge, I don't think. I wouldn't have any deeper midfielder ahead of Pack. Might not have many centre halves ahead of Schaftnessy if you're building like the Dream League 111 at any rate. But
I mean, you said we've not got all the high end talent there, which I think is inflammatory in itself, and I'm going to call you on that. But then you've named almost half a side that would make it into your best League Ones.
In the League One dream team, yeah.
I'll probably name Norris and then Lane. Maybe Kamara.
So that's over maybe half the side.
To be fair, though, I know what Freddie's talking about, because when I previewed the Blackpool game with Tom on the It's Not Orange podcast, I was like, this is not necessarily a team of superstars. This is a team of, you know, a team that the way that we approach things, that you wear teams down, and it's the system thing and the way we play. And then he was like, yeah, that, and you have the superstars on top of it, right? So I think sometimes we have that situation where, yes, we have those players, but they're not the reason on their own that we win games. Does that make sense? Some teams are carried by a few players. Well, I don't think that's the case with this team.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't suggest anyone's carrying us at all. So for you guys, do you think the team is more than a sum of its parts then? And then you're using that to sort of reflect on...
Yeah, I still think it's more than the sum of its parts. It's good players with good coaching on top. It's not like Kenny Jackett's good sides, for example, where it's pretty clear that the high-end talent pushed the side even further than where the coaching would be, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's a reflection on the good job Mancini's done, as well as having the depth as we had before, as well as good recruitment in January, and all the things that have been done well this season. It's all come together, but it's definitely more than just having a few players who are potentially the best in the league in that sense. But all right, let's move on. Thanks for that, Tim. Appreciate it. Even started a debate going back and forward there, a little bit off track as always on the podcast. Samuel messaged in. He said, I think with the inconsistent form of the other teams, we are now nailed on to go up. Famous last words.
What is going on with these messages this week? Well, we've had 1 week off and suddenly everyone's planning the bloody ticker tape. Like, what has happened? I mean, we've won two games, but why are we being confident? I don't like it. Stop it. Stop it now.
Where are you guys going to be for the bus parade? Have interest.
Hopefully leaving Lincoln with a Gert hangover. That's the plan.
Well, Lincoln is
birthday weekend. Have I told you boys about this?
No.
Assuming we get tickets, I've carefully suggested to my girlfriend that we have a lovely weekend in Lincoln on the 27th weekend, even though her birthday is on the day of Lincoln away.
Beautiful location.
I got to agree to a romantic weekend in Lincoln.
It's a lovely city, I will say.
Exactly. Great cathedral, like lovely green spaces. I've given her all the spiel. And I hope she doesn't listen to this. And
she has enough of you anyway. She doesn't want to listen back to you talking, right?
Well, exactly that. She's here for half the recording because I failed to believe that she listens to the one she's not forced to. But so she's agreed to a weekend in Lincoln. So assuming we get tickets, we're keen. We're going to spend her birthday on the pitch at Lincoln, hopefully. Anyway, the ticker tape, I mean, obviously you're going to be sneaking it in every game between now and the end of the season, just in cases.
Yeah, he's right, though. The inconsistent form of teams around us battling each other and, you know, having to play each other a bit as well. So it has helped massively.
Yeah.
Bolton dropping points and just not converting some dominant play in some games has really helped us as well. You know, Peterborough were on a resurgence, but probably left it a little bit too late. And that win has really helped us, I suppose. If they had won that game, then it could be a different story. But Derby is still chugging along, though, aren't they? Four wins in a row, still chugging along pretty well, still just about doing enough to win games as well. They're not blowing teams away, are they? So, but a bit like us, they're finding ways to win. So I think they're the team, obviously, that could catch us, but At this point, looking at it, we don't really care if we come first or second, do we? If we get promoted,
I know we're like 9 points clear of third. I'd still snap your hand off a second, right now.
Honestly, it would hit me in the heart a little bit to lead for the club to lead the league for ages and then drop to second. But then I'd forget about it when I ran on the pitch. So
I think that would have worn off by the end of summer. I genuinely do. By the time football started again, I think big picture would have come in. Again, I'm sure some people will disagree with me on that. This is just my personal opinion. Obviously, I'd want to win the league, but I would still take you. If you offered it now and said, right, you're going up in second behind Derby, guaranteed, I'd still take it because, you know, same. I want to be in the championship.
Just get us out of this league. Yeah, exactly. George Slatcher mentions it and he says, the international break could not have come at a better time for us. By the time we play Wickham on Good Friday, we should have Ogilvy, Angerin, Stevenson, Lang, and of course Raffs and Lane feeling 100% again. How scary is it, boys? We're probably two wins away from automatic promotion up the Blues. George, that so is now the we most only need positive
6 points. Now we only need 6 points, boys. I don't think we need any more points at all. We've had 10, we've had 9, we've had 6. I think we've got enough already, honestly.
Lose every game and we're still going to get promoted, you think?
Just, no, just forfeit, mate. 3-0 defeat. We're fine, in the bag.
I think we can beat Lincoln in the playoffs.
They've scored, what, 15 in three games?
Yeah, I know.
Madness.
Hackett, Fairchild, or just Hackett
now,
Joe
Taylor,
Hackett,
just going
Hackett, hat-trick.
On a complete mad one. Oh, God.
No, I think the international break that has come at a good time. I think Messina is saying it's come at a good time. We need to get some players back healthier, just maximise the squad. The team have been churning out results, but let's be honest, we could do with having everyone back and going again.
Mate, so they're going to be tired. They're going to be tired. Lane looked tired against Burton, I thought. Like, not in a bad performance way, just looked tired completely fairly. So, yeah, I think it'd been good for them to get a bit of time off. And obviously, it means we don't lose Yenge and have to play against Barnsley.
There is some situation as well, isn't there, though, when you're like, you're playing well, you're winning games, etc. You want to carry that sort of momentum on. But I think in this situation, they've won despite being depleted and being tired. So I think George is completely right. The international break's come at a good time for us. Let's just recharge the squad. I'm sure Messina is going to get us the team focused and we go again for the last 7 games of the season. Some very big games in that as well. So let's recharge and go again. Graham messaged in and he says, I do hope so. I really do hope so. Yes, of course we do. Then I do hope so. I really, etc. So on and on, so forth. Plymouth Graham, up the Devon Blues. Well, he's not said we're going up. He said, I hope so, I don't. It sounds like a kindred spirit of yours, Freddie, to be honest. He's sort of trying to level the expectation of it's happening.
He doesn't want to get hurt again, does he? I think that's basically how I would describe it. But yeah, I'm going to wait until it happens, I think, and then fully enjoy myself.
Pompey Kong messages in, the squad is built different. Their mentality and able to bounce back when things go against them is phenomenal. 4 wins will secure the top 2. But Bolton would need to win all the remaining games, which I don't see happening. Wickham, Shrewsbury and Wigan, all very winnable. Will 3 wins do? 9 points? It might do. I think more. I think we need to get more than 9 points. Just to be sure, you never know. Bolton have been so streaky. Peterborough behind them, game in hand, I suppose, if they win that. But yeah, I think we just need to try and aim higher than 9 points in 7 games, let's be honest. I think I would like to see us get 12 points, really. 95 points is what I'd like to see us get. To, if you want my opinion on where we should be now, 95 points, I think, seals top 2. That'd be my just my feeling. It's not based on anything.
So that's 12 points from 7 games, yeah.
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 4 wins.
So that's what? Win 7. Against Wickham.
Well, probably sounds about right, doesn't it?
Win against Wickham, win against Shrewsbury, win at home against Wigan, that's 9 of them.
And then one win.
You've got to get 3 points from Lincoln away, Barnsley at home, Bolton away, Derby at home. Which is, it's one win against, you know, 3 of the other top 4 sides in the league. And then hopefully a Lincoln side that won't have anything to play for, but they may well have playoff football to play for on the last day.
Although if you win and draw one against Bolton and Derby, then win 2 more and it makes 10 points, I think that would probably be okay as well. It just depends on who the wins come against. But if we can beat all the other teams around us. I mean, we haven't actually lost to a team in the top 8 this season. So
that I know is we've insane. Got these... that is an insane stat. Like, I know exact, we've got... Again, the exact opposite of the Kenny Jackett era where we couldn't get any points against a side in like the top 6 for various reasons. But no, the side losing to Cheltenham and Blackpool and Bristol Rovers. And who's the other defeat against? Now, off the top of my head, it's completely gone. But
what's that story, Fred? Cheltenham?
Pompey lost to Cheltenham. They lost to Blackpool. They lost to Bristol Rovers.
Drop points against Fleetwood.
Leighton Orient,
of course, yes.
Leighton Orient got ruined by Dan Adjei, didn't we, in Shaq Ford?
Yeah. Pompey 1898 messaged in and says, the Peterborough game serves as evidence that we have the players to step up, if required. However, I wouldn't fancy testing that again. I wouldn't fancy testing that again. And the fact remains, we are down to the bare bones. So hoping for no more injuries, please. No more injuries. That's what I felt when people go down at this moment in time. But hopefully, as people have pointed out, with players coming back, with the squad being recouped over the next couple of weeks, ready to go again against Wickham, hopefully that will sort of offset any potential freak injuries, I suppose, that happen. But no more injuries in centre midfield, please. And no more injuries in centre back. That's all I can say for this moment in time. Short message in. Yes, it does. We survived this long and injury list. By the time Easter is done, hopefully we'll be getting some players back. Part of our incredible season is our resilience and next man up attitude. Contrast to Bolton, who are bemoaning their injuries. That's true. Wow, 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 Ian Everett. But yeah, no.
Sorry, Ian Everett.
Yeah.
I swear Ian Everett always complains in press conferences as
Mount,
well.
Mount Everett
almost
is known as.
Almost every single week, he always says, oh, the side played a perfect style of football and waxing lyrical, and then they lose 1-0 because they don't convert their chances. I'd be upset as well, to be fair.
Reasonable Hound messes it and says, so as long as Seven doesn't get injured, we'll be fine. Number Seven, that is.
Oh, I thought you said Seddon.
Not Steve Seddon.
I was like, Steve Seddon played against us like 2 weeks ago, didn't he?
He's been quite poor against us recently as well. So
yeah, he got subbed off and had a really bad game, yeah.
Up the Steve Seddon, that's all I can say. Maybe he's just trying to help us out. Maybe he's still got a soft spot in his heart, a melty, gooey soft spot.
I mean, arguably, that was his best spell of his career, arguably, at Portsmouth, wasn't it? I mean, Oxford, he was okay. Didn't pull up any trees, but he was a reasonable player.
Cheeky wink to the Fratton end, that's what gave it away to me. And finally, let's wrap this up then. Akira messaged in and says, at the start of the season, I would say no. But we've done some smart work during January, which has not only kept us going, but actually pushed us on further. Rare to see a good January for Pompey. It's true. It was always crumble after Christmas, but yeah, it's gone well. Let's keep it going. Thanks, everyone messaged in. Appreciate it. There's not really much to talk about now, is there? Oh, one last thing before I forget. You can see I've taken some painkillers for recording. They are kicking in. If anyone's in the Three Bridges area, help Matt or give him a lift. Give Matt a lift to Bolton. Help a man out. He's a fellow PO Forecast member. In fact, he even helped found the podcast with me originally. Help the OG PO Forecast co-host out. No, but seriously, message me if you can help Matt out. He needs a lift to up and down, and he'll be very grateful.
Maybe we can cancel that competition and just give the Atangana shirt to whoever gives Matt
the Atangana shirt.
Atangana
shirt. The Adjuman shirt. What? You said Atangana. You said
the Adjuman shirt. Sorry.
What a blast from the past he was. God.
It's not maybe quite the same, is it?
I've got him on the brain.
Framed Atangana shirt on my wall. Oh, I remember him playing for Pompey. He was fucking brilliant.
Just give the Patrick Adjumang shirt. Screw it. Don't do it. Carry on. I'm done.
On another note, if no one can give Matt a lift to Bolton, let's be honest, we might be doing a ticket giveaway as well.
Nah, I'll drag Tarrell. There's like going to be thousands of Pompey fans who want to go, and I'll just take a South African who doesn't give a toss about football. No. Yeah, Matt can't go. There might be one up for grabs, yeah.
Exactly. Although you'd have to be near us, at least for the start, so that could be a downside. But, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we don't really go with the tickets, say, do we, if we've been on.
I meant before the game. You'd have to meet us.
You know, that could potentially be the worst weekend for me to work after booking the last two games of the season off those weekends. They put me on Bolton away as the weekend. Sad times.
Yeah, it's upsetting, to be honest, Freddie. It's upsetting. Who else is going to be there with me and Andy at 7 o'clock in the morning in a nightclub in Bolton, because we can't afford to go out of Manchester?
Are there any good bars in Bolton? I've not done Bolton away before.
Don't know. I was going to refer to Freddie, but he hates people from Lancashire, so I'm not really sure he's going
to
say anything.
I've never been out in Bolton either, so I don't know. I've been to the stadium, though. It's nice, but barely to the centre of Bolton, because you just go to Horridge instead.
All right, now we've talked about the competition. We've gone through the stuff, boys. I think it's just time to wrap this up. Andy, it's been great having you on the podcast.
Always a pleasure. This Saturday, don't know what I'm going to do. I have to actually spend time with my partner. yeah, there's no game. What ideas on a postcard? Don't know. See you lads at Wickham. Looking forward to it. By the way, in Wickham, there is a chair museum. Just saying, I know what we're doing post-game.
I'm aware of that due to my career. And Verco are a very big producer of chairs in Wickham. So I've been in their executive box before. They have a chair box in the chair ground. So yeah.
I did not expect to get fact-topped when I gave that bit of trivia. Fair play. I doff my cap to you. Lovely to chat, pal.
Exciting stuff. Freddie Webb, always a pleasure, mate.
Oh, I lovely to be back on. And thank you to the listeners for bearing with us this season as well.
Speak for yourself, Fred. I think I'm quite good company. Don't know about you.
Yeah, thanks for managing to trawl through these. And yeah, we appreciate your support. And if you do want to support us more, give us a 5-star rating. There you go. Freddie's trying to set me up.
Well, if Freddie says that we need to be endured, then we're not going to get many 5-star ratings if we're
that. To be fair, Andy, you've said similar on pods as well. But that was possibly just us two. So that might be
lies and slander, Fred. Lies and slander.
He's the king of slander. He's a journalist. But until next time, play up, Pompey.
You have been listening to the PO Forecast for Pompey News Now, available on SoundCloud, Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Follow PO Forecast and Pompey News Now on Twitter for more information.
And there is the full-time whistle!